Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 2nd of December. And this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook audio, although I promise you I'm not going to run to another 37 minutes because that's subscriber abuse, and I've also got a concert that I'm hurrying to this evening. Okay, first though, a quick review of the week. It has been a pretty solid performance, well, ending that way at any rate, for stock markets. We had some shakeouts earlier in the week, some warning shot across the bows, key day reversals, and then Japan, I think, largely caused the turnaround in global sentiment towards stock markets, with two absolutely bumper days on the upside, including another 1.92% today on the Nikkei index. And that brought buyers back in, and they have also fueled big rises in precious metals. This has been a stunning week for those of us who hold precious metals. We've also seen some technical evidence, some preliminary technical evidence that oil is bottoming, and actually natural gas has provided a lot more than preliminary technical evidence. It's provided pretty well ironclad, or should I say gas-clad evidence that we've seen the bottom in that commodity. Okay, that's the main stuff. Not a whole lot going on in currencies, although some of the resources currencies have been stronger, which is hardly surprising against that background. Now, big picture long-term outlook. I think that the liquidity theme is hugely important. There's still plenty of that stuff around, and there's going to remain lots of liquidity around. And there are two key factors that I think are contributing to this. But first, let's just repeat the point here that absolutely every central bank is just pumping up the liquidity. And they're doing so because, as I've said before and said today again in the comment, because of the pressures of globalization, and against that background, what they fear most of all is an appreciating currency. So no country, no central bank wants an appreciating currency. Just think what that means for assets such as gold and other precious metals. The other factor, of course, is that they still fear deflation, really related to that globalization competitive pressure. And then they also know that as long as we have this competition, and particularly in manufacturing, that will keep wage pressures, well, certainly helps to keep a lid on some of the wage pressures fairly effectively. And they know that with China producing all those manufactured goods, that they can still show some pretty low core inflation figures overall. Well, this is choose your statistic, because incidentally, this is not just an academic point to hear, because you and I can choose our statistic, and the one I choose is what I see in the form of strength of precious metals and also other industrial resources. Again, right back to the supply and elasticity theme, which is a co-favorite of mine for not only this decade, but really starting since 2003, but for the next decade probably as well. This one's going to run and run and run. In terms of the secular versus secular debate, I come down very firmly on the side that this is secular, and that we will see cyclical swings from anything from a few months, as we've seen with oil recently, from those August highs, a couple of years, as we've seen with tin, as we saw with silver, And not quite a couple of years, but 18 months, as we saw with gold, I believe. And then they run again on the upside. So that's the type of pattern that I expect to see. Now, people write voluminous reports saying that, but the supply is going to go up for sure. And they're looking back in terms of the last 20 years or more or so, and seeing production push up has actually happened in the 1970s, so you can go back earlier. And then we would get peaks in metals, and they'd come rattling off. Well, first, this time around, it's a whole lot harder to push up that production. Why is that? Well, for a number of factors. First, there are fewer skilled people around in the industry. That will change. But to attract people into the mining industry, it's not something everybody wants to do, obviously. And in terms of mining engineers, that hasn't been a popular career option over the last 20 years, although that will change. That is now changing. The management itself is mostly older than I am. And then there are shortages or high rising costs. Mining can be energy intensive, usually is. And then they need those big, huge, heavy earth-moving machines, and they need all the love steel that goes into that. And they can't even get the tires for those outsized dump trucks that they want, because everybody's trying to do the same thing. And of course, they're also a little bit of bit cautious because they fear that perhaps this is cyclical rather than secular. And then there are the environmental problems. So what you have is rising prices. That's the consolation for the miners, but you're not getting a massive increase in production as a lot of people had forecast. Now, that production will inevitably increase. It can only increase with rising markets, but will it increase fast enough to more than exceed the growing demand? And I say probably not. Now, this demand really is unprecedented. You can go back to so similar themes, war scenarios, go back to the 70s. You can find times when demand was picking up, the industrialization, or the Industrial Revolution rather. But this one, I think, is bigger relative to the supply. And it's not just China, of course. You just go to Dubai and look at what's going on there, and go back into Asia, India's infrastructure. This is going to just run and run and run in terms of this enormous demand. And of course, they haven't stopped using this stuff in developed countries as well. So supply and elasticity, hugely important theme. And I keep hearing people say, yeah, we like Rio Tinto, hit another new high here today, one of my core positions. So, yeah, we like Rio Tinto, but we think it's overextended, so we're moving out of this now. I'm not selling that share. And I think that sometimes the hardest thing to do in this business is to stay with what is really doing well. Now, if I get some sort of big, hairy type 3 top formation forming on Rio Tinto or anything else that I hold, then I'm going to consider my options as anybody but a fool would do. And I will hope to avoid that level of foolishness. But at this stage, I'm very happy to hang in there, and I can justify it very easily with what I see going on in the charts. The big theme is emerging markets, and that's a pretty obvious one, and is less controversial perhaps than the secular versus cyclical debate in the supply and elasticity theme. And I maintain, as I have on so many occasions, and would elaborate now on it again, but that India is a very special situation. And if one new subscribers who want to know more about that, well, you can find it all by using the search engine, going back and just looking at everything on India that's of interest to you. There's been plenty, and there'll be plenty more. So this to me is the most attractive stock market overall on a very long-term basis. Doesn't mean it's going to be the top performer all the time, obviously, but it's been an awfully good performer recently, and I'm going to hold what I have, and I will always consider the possibility of buying a bit more on significant setbacks. As I said today, the biggest risk is that at some stage, and quite possibly next year, investors take fright generally. I'm not talking about just in India. But Western investors who have pushed a lot of money, and Asian investors who pushed a lot of money into India, they take fright. And foreign investors, and you get a sell-off, and then locals participate. And so you get a disproportionately large reaction, which of course is another fantastic buying opportunity. It's inevitable that that will happen at some stage or other. And as I say, I wouldn't be surprised if it happened next year, but that's guesswork on my part. So we'll just have to see. I do think, just repeat my point that I'll be amazed if we don't, if we're able to get through next year without a fairly significant correction. Now, India is the one market where this supply and emerging market rather, where this supply and elasticity theme does not coexist with the emerging market growth story theme. And I'm thinking of markets such as Brazil, political risks there, but plenty of resources, so that's going to remain a very interesting situation. Then you get the Eastern European markets. That's not a resources story for the most part, but very dynamic situation, particularly relative to the developed European countries. That's an attractive theme. You get Russia with the mouth-watering resources, but it's best played to the bigger companies. And even they're probably worth it because of the valuations, even though those companies are sliced. I beg your pardon. That the profits are siphoned off in what's basically a kleptocracy. And there's plenty of that going on in the developing world, but it's more than worth the risks, I think overall. How well Wall Street does during a generational long process of valuation contraction, we've seen a lot of valuation contraction on Wall Street, but how well the actual stock market does depends on the amount of liquidity that's sloshing around in the system, and there's certainly plenty of that now, and I think central banks are likely to err on the side of too much rather than too little liquidity for a very, very long time. Other hugely important themes in stock markets, Japan and Korea, South Korea, of course, those are the top two primarily industrial-based stock markets for the very long term. Both are coming off secular bear markets and are in secular bull markets. I don't really need to look further than that, and I'd rather go with those than Germany, for instance. Although Germany's has been an impressive story, and of course, just jumping back to the supply and elasticity theme once again, and all the currency that's being created, all that liquidity that's sloshing around, the precious metal story is phenomenal, and it's just begun. Christopher Wood repeated that today in his report, or in the report posted today, regarding gold, and I couldn't agree more. Those markets are going much, much higher. They are core positions for me. Okay, what about government bonds? I can do that quickly. I only want to short the rallies when those rallies tire. Secular bear market, as I've mentioned before. What about the currencies? Well, in comparison to what I've just been talking about, the natural resources, industrial resources, and precious metals and the emerging markets, Japan, South Korea, in comparison to that, the currencies are boring, 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 partly because, to repeat, no central bank, no country wants a strong currency, so we get the unstated competitive devaluation activity and the pegging and so on. Inevitably, though, there are moves in these markets. My hunch is that the next big move in the dollar is downwards, but that may not start until people have pretty well decided that the peak in the rise in US interest rates has been reached, and that's a boat that gets pushed out and towed in from time to time, but mostly pushed out. And we've seen some strong economic data from the US this week, even allowing for the hedonic reporting and accounting that takes place in most government statistics. So I think overall, if I favor anything, and I do, it's the resources currencies. I mean, that's a bit of a no-brainer, particularly the developed country resources currencies. But then they get a go ahead or get run ahead of themselves too far, too fast, and central banks in those countries just increase the supply of the currency, help push it down or jawbone it down, or may even cut rates. Interest rates differentials, remember though, they remain the hard fundamental play. And that's why all this talk about how the yen is about to, remember all that talk at the beginning of the year, late last year, about how the dollar was about to go to 90 or lower yen against the dollar. Well, how's that going to happen when you have this interest rate differential steadily appreciating in favor of the dollar? It's silly, and you usually get that type of aggressive forecast when a trend is already overextended, such as the dollar index getting down to that 80 level. Now it's around the 92 level, and this dollar looks like a tired bull to me. And energy, I've covered that. I've covered the resources pretty much, so I can call this a wrap. It's been a fabulous week, an exciting week, an exhausting week. So you're entitled to a splendid weekend, and that's just what I aim to have myself as well. All the best.